Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law, that's pound 529, from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is a football Friday here on the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi coming at you for the next 2 hours here on VSiN. Michael back on the East Coast. I am here in Las Vegas. And Michael, I guess on the East Coast today, all is well. Jets get a win last night in the Meadowlands, 21-13. They cover the 2.5. Is that the vibe today, Michael, that we're waking up to, that the Jets are back, baby?
I don't know. I feel like when the Riddler used to ask Batman a question, what does a win look like a loss? That would be evidence right there. I mean, wow, what a bad game. I mean, Al Michaels wanted to go to Toscano's at about the middle of the first quarter. He's like, get me out of this game. You know, it was an interesting game in the standpoint that I think what we talked about yesterday came true. You know, the Jets struggled to protect. Houston Texans struggled to protect. The left guard was a disaster again. Mm-hmm. Kenyon Green, they're going to have to remove him. They did last night again. They benched him. But I think what we saw last night was how good Stroud can be, and their ability to make field goals is the reason why they've won six games in spite of the bad offensive line. And last night, they had a meltdown. They missed two field goals. One was 56-yarder. The 27-yarder was a complete shock to him to miss. But I think their margin of victory was so small going in, right? They had the blowout win against New England. They had the blowout loss against Minnesota. But every other game was 6 points or under in their wins. And I think their margin of error is so tight that when the kicker doesn't make his kicks, they lose their game. And when Stroud's not able to get out of the pocket and make plays, you know, that offensive line shows up and becomes a real liability. And I think the question you have to ask yourself, is this team really a Super Bowl caliber team? And the answer is no. I mean, going into the game, David, they ranked 27th in offensive efficiency. Like last night wasn't just a game to where the Texans didn't play their best and it was a Thursday night. No, the numbers have been trending in the wrong direction for Houston. As we mentioned yesterday all the time, they were 28th in sacks allowed, 28th in penalties, 27th on first down efficiency, you know, 29th in throws over 20 yards. But, you know, they still had a chance to win the game because the Jets, frankly, aren't there, have the same issues with their team. So, look, I think to me, leaving there, if you're knowing Nick Cesario as well as I do, he's going to try to make a trade. Now, the problem is trying to trade for an offensive lineman ain't easy to do this time of the year. But everybody in Houston knows we're not beating any good team with this line the way it's playing right now.
I'm looking at that total, and it closed 43.5, Michael. And you and I talked about it yesterday in the show. I'm like, what are we missing here? It felt like a dead under game. It stayed dead under here, 21-13. Got a little bit dicey. The Jets did have 21 points in the second half after trailing 7-0 at halftime. But, boy, the offensive inefficiencies here by both teams, some red zone turnovers. We saw that one of them. We saw another DeSean Jackson play where we're dropping the ball before the goal line. I thought we were done with those. You still scratch your head a little bit at the Jets offense. And then it finally got going in the second half to look more what we thought Aaron Rodgers would bring to the table. So is that a blueprint for them with, you know, finally getting 17 and Rodgers back on the same page, Garrett Wilson with a highlight reel touchdown and a couple of really nice touchdowns in the second half, right? Like, can we start to say, that wide receiving core is going to give Rodgers a chance?
Well, I'm not sure of that. Corley, again, had the dumbest play in the history of football, right? I think if you have that play, if you make that play, you should be suspended for four games. I mean, you should not play for four games. You can get your paycheck. You can practice. But I'm not putting you on the field for a month. Like, there's no chance I'm doing that. You want to be that dumb and you want to cost your team. Look, all the underbetters just rejoice in Corley's decision to drop the ball before he got. Like, what is the motivation for dropping the ball before you get in the end zone? Like, seriously, why don't you, you know, like Barry Sanders said, act like you've been here before. You know, I mean, spike it. I don't care what you do, but can we cross the line? Like, do we have to give it away that early? I mean, how stupid is that, really? I mean, I don't know how you put a guy back on the field when you're that selfish and that stupid. I don't know. But look, to me, the Garrett Wilson, the first touchdown, that one-handed catch, I mean, that could have been a pick.
Yeah.
I mean, really, Petrie, I thought he had a chance to make a play on that football. That could have been a pick. And then I still didn't see it as a touchdown. I know they called it a touchdown.
They reversed it.
Yep. They said his shin got down. I mean, I didn't see it that way, but God bless them for doing it. Look, it went that way, and they made the plays that they had to make. I mean, Rodgers, I didn't think was good. He can't move. There was a ton of pressure on him, too. So, look, it was interesting. I really thought Bobby Slowick really – I mean, he was running – they could run the ball a little bit. I don't know why he became preoccupied with trying to throw this thing as much as he did, knowing that he couldn't protect at all.
Yeah, you're right, because Mixon went over the century mark, 106 yards, that touchdown in the first half, 24 carries. They did have a semblance of a running game going. And the core we played, Michael, I'm so glad that you laid it out the way you did, because, you know, if you go on social media – you're going to see the, I feel bad for the guy. I'm like, is this the first day he ever played football?
I don't feel bad.
I don't either. I don't at all.
I don't feel bad. Like, I feel bad for his teammates.
Yes.
Why you feel bad for him? I feel bad for his teammates. I mean, come on, give me a break. We're going to feel sorry for him. Oh, let's take him to Dairy Queen, too, and make sure he gets an extra Sunday for being an idiot, right? Like, seriously, are you kidding me? Feel sorry for him?
It's unreal.
It's not that complicated,
no,
right?
It's not that hard.
It's not that complicated.
But that's where we are these days. And I thought, wow, I would feel bad for the other 52 that you just give up 7 points for what? Style points? I don't know what the point is, what the attraction to doing that continually still is today. And I'm with you. I mean, we're at the highest level of professional football here. You've been doing this your whole life to get to this point. This isn't the first touchdown you've ever scored. How in the world this is even in your mind to drop the football, I have no idea. But one day, that can cost you. We all remember DeSean Jackson, and I hope people would learn that lesson today from it. Let's hear from Aaron Rodgers, though, Michael, because I want to see if he really thought that if they didn't turn things around in the second half, was the season, in fact, on the brink?
Yeah, it was kind of season on the line there in the second half. Obviously, we wouldn't have been mathematically eliminated, but mentally – to go to 2-7 would have been real, real tough. Hopefully it's given us confidence so that we can beat anybody, because we feel like we could. You know, the way we played on offense in the second half is the way we've been kind of waiting for this offense to wake up. And I know obviously I was, close to perfection as I needed to be. But that's the standard I need to play at.
Yeah, I think to me that if anybody thinks the Jets have turned the corner based on that second half, you might want to think again, right? I think to me, you know, this is the Jets are going to be really have issues in every single game going forward. I don't see how this is going to change them at all. I don't look at them as a playoff team. That offensive line is not good enough to me, and I don't think Rodgers is good enough. Look, they're going to have to go out to Arizona next week. Do you think they're going to be, you know, I don't think they'll be favorites in that game. Then they come home and play Indianapolis before the bye week. So, look, I one thing about the Jets, I don't think you can look at the schedule and start counting wins. They're not that good. They really aren't. And you can run the football. You can throw the football on them. There's no question about that. I mean, you can run the ball on them. There's no question about that. And their offense is, to me, is predicated and held together by that offensive line, which isn't very good. So, and look, let's face it. I don't think Rodgers is lighting it up either. I mean, you could see it from the first pass of the game. I mean, he's got a guy wide open, and he throws it out of bounds. I mean, you never saw that before out of Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I'm with you. And, like, I'm hearing that from Rodgers, and I get it. He's trying to put the positive spin on it, right? Like, we feel like we can beat anybody. That's the second half is the level of perfection that I need to achieve and the offense needs to achieve. And I'm like, where has that been? So it's nice to see it for a half. It is. That's great. But can you really expect that second half of offense to translate now for the rest of the year? Because when you're 3-6, your margin for error is so limited, right? Like, can they really think that this is going to be the bloom and blossom this offense for the rest of the way we saw it in the second half?
I don't see how you could actually go there, David. I really don't. I mean, to me, you know, the thing is, you know, you're going to take the weekend off. It isn't like, you know, Tyron Smith isn't going to get any better as he, as the season gets older and he starts to really, whatever play he has now is only going to go down.
Right.
And I think same thing with Morgan Moses. Look, I think Garrett Wilson's dynamic. There's no question about that. But, you know, they'll get Vera Tucker back at right guard, which I think will certainly help them. But I think at the end of the day, you know, this is a real issue for their team. They're just, I don't think, to me, let's be brutally honest here. I just don't think Rodgers is good enough to carry a team. I think he's going to need a lot of help. And look, as good as everybody thinks this Jet defense is I think you can exploit them. Now, last night, their defensive front won the game. They get 8 sacks on a quarterback. They forced Stroud to run the ball for 58 yards, which is not what he wants to do, right? But I think, to me, that's the key. That's the key to the game is they're just not good enough in their offensive line at the quarterback position. And then defensively, you know, I think if they would have run the ball a little bit more, you might have been able to control the pace of the game. Look, if Fairbairn makes the kicks that he typically makes, yep, this might game shift to a lot of the games that Houston has won. Remember we said yesterday, 27 points have come from 50-yard field goals. 27. And they won 5 games by 6 points or less. Their margin is very slim. And what happened last night? He didn't make a 50-yarder. He missed 2 kicks, and they lose a game.
That's second kick, by the way. 14-10 in the fourth quarter. Remember, the number's 2.5. And he makes the first kick, 43-yarder. You get the roughing on the snapper, so it's a 15-yard penalty. They take the points off the board, move it forward, can't get in, then they have to kick the chippy, and he boinks that one off the goalpost. And you're thinking, oh, my goodness. Like, if you took Houston +2 and you had it at 14-13,
yeah,
and you just thought, oh, the dreaded taking the points off the board, here we go. But the Jets ended up making a touchdown anyway to make it 21-10, late field goal here by the Texans to make it an 8-point game. By the way, we're going to go to Thomas Borgata coming up later on this hour right there in your neck of the woods. I'll be very curious to see how he fared last night, how the books fared, and if the Jets backers, if they're backing the Jets with their money going forward. That'll be interesting. And Tim Murray's going to join us in hour number 2, Michael. So we got a lot of college football to set the table for today as well. So we got a lot to get to here on the Football Friday edition here of the Lombardi Line. Don't go anywhere. Just getting it started here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Continuing our conversation here in the Lombardi Line, Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi here with you. Going to have Thomas Gable from the Borgata join us in the next segment there from Jersey. But Michael, we do have to get to some of these injury reports that we see. And you and I talked about it this week, and sometimes you see those Wednesday ones. You really have to keep your eye on the Thursday one. And the one I think that really is kind of catching at least my eye is the Puka Nacua one, that he left practice early yesterday for the Rams, right? They flipped favorites. Remember, Seattle opened as a small favorite, then Rams flipped to the favorite. Yep. And, you know, Michael, we all know how good Puka Nacua is, but when I watched that game on Thursday night against the Vikings last week, and you saw the difference it really made in the offense and the comfort level for a guy like Matthew Stafford, if Puka can't go, I just wonder if that's another line mover here to Seattle's factor, because he really did make a huge difference coming back from that knee injury.
You know, I was looking at it this morning, Dave, for that very reason, and I think it has moved the line. I mean, now we're talking about it went to Pick'em in some shops. I think when you look at some of the offshore books, it's really at Pick'em, and sometimes the Rams are now back to getting a point. I think he moved the line. Here we have it here on DraftKings. It's a Pick'em here, which makes sense. He does. Look, one of the things Puka does is, you know, he gives them another blocker in the run game because he's big and physical. And then he is the guy that they need to get the ball to. Cooper Kupp isn't the same receiver based on all the injuries. He's still an effective player. I'm not saying that. I had a huge debate last Friday from Mad Dog, who was remembering when Cooper Kupp was this elite receiver, as if he still is now. You know, he's a good player now. He's just not the same level he was in 21 when he had that great run of a season. His numbers have trended downward, but he's still effective and he still can do things. My point being is that Puka is really the driver of this offense now in the run game, and they need to run the football, which you can on Seattle. They're one of the worst run defenses in the league, which hasn't improved with Mike McDonald going in there. I thought it would, but it hasn't. And, you know, they've got to be able to find a way to get pressure on Stafford. If they run the ball, the Rams, this is when the Rams offense is really good.
Yeah, that's a significant moves there in those numbers down to pick them, as you're seeing here on your screen. Against Seattle here. And another one, DK Metcalf did not practice again. I don't think we're anticipating that he's going to be able to play here again for Seattle. We know that makes a big difference. And the other big move, when I come in here, Michael, in the morning, and I'm checking out the big board here at Circa, is you see the Ravens number is down to 8. Remember, that was as high as 9.5 against the Broncos. And that's because Lamar Jackson did not practice yesterday with that knee and that back. And, you know, I start going through the depth chart here and you go, wow, Josh Johnson's the backup here in Baltimore. What do you make of that? And how much do you push a guy like Lamar, who is playing at such a high level right now as the reigning defending MVP and on the short list possibly to do it 2 in a row?
I don't think Lamar's not going to play. I think this is just strictly all rest. I think, you know, he had a run around. I mean, he escaped some of the rushes last week. I think that game took a toll on him. Mm. I'd be surprised if he wasn't out there today. You know, and I think to me, one thing about this Raven team, you know, they're going to run the same stuff they run every week. I'm sure he feels very comfortable in doing it. But I think today would be the day I would get nervous. I think this line, look, the Broncos are a funny team. They're really good defensively. They're able to play. They can rush the passer. They're physical up front. You know, this offensive line for Baltimore has still been a work in progress. I think that's where the Broncos have an advantage, is they can handle that. Vance Joseph has done a really good job of coordinating this Bronco defense. I thought the 9 was a little too heavy. It got down to 8.5. I don't think this line's moving because of Lamar's injury. I think this line's moving because I think it's a little bit too large. I think it's just too big of a line. Although, you know, I wrote today for Visa Online, it's one of those lines where I don't want to take the 9 and I don't want to lay the 9. It's one of those, it's what I call my Hall & Oates plays. I have no interest. I can't go for this one. You know, it's just, I can't do it. Although I should, I just don't have enough guts to do it, because I have this as like a 4.7 game in my lines. And, you know, it was at 9 at one time. You know, for the contest, David, you know, I always push the contest in my, when I do the lines, I always put the contest numbers in my lines, because I think what the book is telling you, what Circa's telling you when they put the Thursday lines out for the $1 million contest, is that's where they think the line will end up. Right. That's where they think it will go to. And so for us here on a Friday, we're always wondering what's the closing line going to be. Mm-hmm. And this game here, they had it at +9. The Rams game, they had the Rams. You get Seattle on 1.5, which it's now pick 'em. So you pick up an extra point. I think this is how a lot of people pick their 5 picks in the contest, is where do I gain the advantage?
Absolutely. Trying to take advantage of those numbers. And by the way, I think I Can't Go For That is the best Hall & Oates song. That's just me personally. I think it's the best one. We did see a line move here between the Lions and the Packers. It is significant because we've dipped back under 3 to get this down to 2.5. I think that's good news, and maybe that money's coming in because Jordan Love is back. It was limited at practice with that groin. But, Michael, does that tell you what you need to know, that Jordan's going to be able to go?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, I think this line pushing back, I think there was a look in the contest, this line ended up being 3, right? And so I think that's the right number for the line. The Packers are getting 3 at home. It's a good play. I think you're going to see a lot more Packer money come in, more, and it'll work this number down. Right now we're at 2.5, which I think is probably true. And I think most shops are at 3. You might be able to find a 3 and pay a tax on it. Mm-hmm. But I think there's no question. And look, I think this Ram line's going to keep going down. I think that's the other one. I think that we haven't seen it hit bottom. The other line that's moving quite a bit, and I don't think it's injury related, is there's a lot of people have faith in Cleveland.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of sharp money coming in on Cleveland. That number has gone down against the Chargers. And really, when you break this game down, they match up really well against the Chargers. You can see statistically it's a game where you have to lean towards Cleveland, because the Chargers offensively are not very good. They haven't been able to do much. I mean, they can run the football, but not great. You know, they kind of play ugly. Even though they have a great quarterback in Herbert, they struggle to really to have a great passing game because they're really limited in the skill positions. in terms of making explosive plays. And we know Cleveland's really good. I think the only thing that would hesitate me in taking the Browns here is what Winston are we going to get? Are we going to get the Winston who protects the ball? Or are we going to get the Winston who turns it over? You're always running that risk here. Yeah. But I could see Cleveland being the team that upsets the Chargers this weekend. I think it's a hard game. Going to be raining. So we're going to have some weather in this game. And I think, you know, now it's one thing about the East Coast so far this weekend, we're going to have clear weather. I mean, and we're going to have warm weather. It's going to be 55 and it's supposed to have some precipitation. Bill Vinovich will be the official in the game. And, you know, I think to me that favors the road team because he's 70-99 against the spread for the home team.
You know, I'm sitting there watching this Saints number climb up. It's still at 7 now. I remember it was about 4.5, 5, and then just jumped up with the news that Derek Carr it was going to be back this week. He was limited in practice yesterday with that oblique. And then you look at the Saints, you go, they've lost 6 in a row. I mean, Michael, do you remember after weeks 1 and 2, and I know what they did to my Cowboys down there in Big D, and I think they just scored again. Like, is it all Derek Carr? Like, was that all Derek Carr in the first 2 weeks? And then without him, their offense just couldn't function?
Well, no, look, they lost some offensive linemen, right? I mean, the Saints have lost 6 in a row, okay? And they are the 6th team in NFL history to accomplish the goal of winning the first two and then losing 6 in a row. The last team, David, this will jar your memory a little bit. The last team to do exactly what the Saints have done are the Cowboys in 2015.
Oh.
Now, those 5 teams prior to this team had 6 wins or less, which doesn't bode well for the Saints. I wrote about this for today. No matter how badly the Saints have played in recent weeks, the fact that they're a 7-point favorite against a team on the road tells you how bad the Panthers are, right? They're god-awful. And, you know, which is why a bad team is a 7-point favorite. This has nothing to do with Carr coming back. This has everything to do with that Carolina is just really bad, really bad.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, and that's why that number has moved up to 7. By the way, had dinner last night. Lou Finicaro's in town, Michael, sends his regards, and he says he's listening to us last night, and he says, no, you guys are dead on in this under in this Jets game on Thursday night. We saw the number keep ticking up, and he texted me because, no, you and Michael are right on it. And it closed 43.5 last night, by the way, and I still couldn't believe it closed that high. And I was like, Lou, why are you in town? He says he's in town, Michael, for the Breeders' Cup. And so, look, if you're betting the Breeders' Cup, like Lou is, we got you covered here at VSiN. It's packed with insights. It's a new betting guide. It's got everything you need from our top experts here with the 6 race preview. The guide is not going to give you anything that you don't need to know to help you cash some tickets at that window. So if you're serious about cashing in the Breeders' Cup this weekend, you got to be a VSiN Pro subscriber to get this guide. Join now for $120. You're going to get full access of it all the way through May 1st. So sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. And Michael, I said to Lou, I got no shot at cashing.
Looked like you had fun last night. Where were you guys? I saw the picture online. Where were you guys?
Dom Domico's here in town, had some great pizza, met some great people that have been around the block and some of the sharpest
Hopefully
minds.
Crack pick up the tab. Did
Bill,
Crack
Bill
pick
was
up
there.
The tab?
It was, Lou picked up everything. Uncle Lou did everything. And it was just a great conversation with some of the sharpest minds. I was honored to be invited to that table, Michael. You know how that goes. You're like, wow, you guys are calling me? I am honored to be there. So it was great to catch up with Lou and the boys last night. Had a really, really good time. And yes, your name was brought up quite often, Michael. When we come back here, much more football to get. And we're going to go out to Thomas Gable at the Borgata. That's going to be a lot of fun next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We are back on the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi here with you. And Michael, with the return of the Lombardi Line, you have made a lot of people happy because now we get to go back out to the Borgata and catch up with Thomas Gable. You can follow Thomas on X as I do at T Gable Sports. Does a great job there. Obviously, as the sportsbook director, joins us now in the Progressive Guest Line. Thomas, welcome back to the Lombardi Line. It is always good to catch up with you. Michael and I were talking about it. We got to know from you at the book, was everybody betting the Jets last night and cashing those tickets, laying the 2.5?
Yeah, good morning, guys. And they were here. It was not a great result for us. The Jets we're bet up to 2.5 point favorites at post. So, yeah, I mean, I made the game one with the injuries that the Texans were facing going into that game. And obviously the market, you know, bet that up from there. And not a great result. They were betting the Jets in play as well as pregame. So, yeah, tough result for us. But I don't know as far as this team going forward, really how you view this team. I mean, obviously the Texans were not at full strength last night. Nice win for the Jets. And they do have some doable games. They have some winnable games coming up. But I don't know if the Jets fans believe that, like, they're going to be Joe Burrow and just suddenly reel off the wins the rest of the way out and they're going to cruise into the playoffs. I just don't see that happening. I keep hearing from people who have Jets season win total over 9.5 that they're still alive and they still have hope. But I don't know. I mean, it's just one good half of football there in the second half, which, listen, this game was not a well-played game at all last night. I don't know how much optimism you can truly have around this team. Rodgers is clearly not the Aaron Rodgers of old. And, you know, while they have some nice pieces on paper and they do have some talent, it's a little confounding here outside of Rodgers. I don't know. I just don't see this team really, unless you can reel off another 4 or 5 in a row here, how you can even begin to have the conversation of the Jets competing still for the AFC.
Yeah, I don't see how they are one of the 7 teams. I mean, at the end of the day, it took a lot from Houston, which didn't behave in their normal manner. Houston usually makes field goals, which is why they've won 6 games, and they usually win close games. So they find a way to make plays at the end, and they just couldn't do it today. Let's spin this forward. We have Doug Peterson returning to the city of brotherly love in Philadelphia. He'll be standing next to the statue, he and Nick Folk. Yeah. They could have a reunion, if we will. That line is at 7. It could go to 7. What's the action on this game? Are people betting the Eagles, or is this number staying at 7 and not moving in your shop?
No, I'm at 7.5, Michael, and they are betting the Eagles. And I mean, listen, this is speaking about optimism. All of a sudden now there's a lot of optimism around the Philadelphia Eagles. You know, coming off of their bye week, they've had 3 straight wins here. A very contentious win there against Cleveland, where the fans really sort of turned on Sirianni and vice versa. And then they went to the Meadowlands, took care of business against the lowly Giants pretty easily. And then had a very nice win last week against Cincinnati, especially, again, played a great second half there against Cincinnati. So I think since the bye week has happened, what you've seen with Philadelphia, I think the secondary has played a lot better. They made some changes there. And, you know, the adjustments Vic Fangio made, I think, are starting to pay dividends. Now, they haven't gone up against great lines. I'd still like to see them get a little bit more pressure up front there defensively. But on the offensive side of the ball, they also got healthy again. They got A.J. Brown back. They got Devontae Smith back. The offensive line, I think, is playing at a high level. Jalen Hurts is getting a lot of time to throw and make decisions, which is key for him. And, you know, so the offense is looking a little bit better here the last couple weeks. And I think the other reason for optimism here around Philadelphia, if you look at the schedule for them, they have one of the easiest schedules here moving forward. Now, obviously, for the division, they're still competing with the Commanders. Commanders certainly right there after that Hail Mary. They continue to stay up there atop the NFC East. But they still have those games against the Commanders. They're probably going to end up deciding the division. But the Eagles, by and large, I think have a very, very easy schedule to close out the season here. And I just think that's one of the main reasons here for the optimism. Yeah, they haven't played the greatest of opponents the last 3 weeks, because remember, Watson was still a quarterback for the Browns there. But,
I do remember.
You can only play who's in front of you. And I think Philadelphia still has a shot. I just don't know, you know, saying that this team again is on the level of a Detroit is a laughable statement though at this point.
Thomas, you mentioned the Commanders. They're going to go on the road this week after that Hail Mary win against the Bears and go to the Meadowlands up there in your neck of the woods. This number's crept up 4.5, so I'm starting to see out there as well in favor of the road team here. Are people in that neck of the woods, is this a fade against the Giants? Are they starting to really believe that this Commander team has some staying power?
No, I think you've seen from bettors that they are starting to believe in the Commanders and they're starting to believe in Daniels. They have been backing them with their wallets the last few weeks. And this one, again, I'm not surprised in the line movement in this one. Open 3.5 and now up to 4. And, you know, again, we'll always take some Giants money just from Giants fans. Very recreational money. But we're probably going to end up needing the Giants here to cover wherever this closes at. It certainly could go to 4.5 as well. But I think the Commanders is one of those teams that they have seems that they have proven themselves the betters in at least the first 8 weeks of the season.
TG, biggest game of the weekend, the Lions travel into Lambeau Field to play the Packers. We think Jordan Love's going to play. What kind of action are you getting on this game?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's the big thing that's hanging over this game is Jordan Love's status. And really what you saw was respected money come in at 3 and scoop up the 3 there and take it with the Packers in anticipation that Love could be able to go. And obviously you'd be getting a great number there, getting 3 at home with Love at quarterback. But, you know, now down to 2.5. And again, you know, Willis, while he has stepped in and played admirably, much better than I would have expected him to when Love has been absent, two completely different offenses when Love is in there. And a big game here for the division. I know this game is being played in Green Bay, but Detroit, 2.5 at this point, with Love, I think is probably the right number if Love is going to go. And Detroit right now, they seem to be this juggernaut in the NFC. So this is going to be a great game to watch. And I just think they're the Lions, though. They look so strong at this point. And what they did last week against the Titans with not really doing a whole heck of a lot on offense, it seemed, but they put up a ton of points. This is just one very, very dangerous team. I have them the highest power-rated team in the NFL by 2 points at this point.
Thomas, I have about 90 seconds to go. I got to ask you, I know it's still a very dicey conversation in that neck of the woods about the Yankees going out in 5 in the World Series and my beloved Mets going out in 6 in the NLCS. How was the money on that? Did you guys need the Dodgers, ironically, because of I'm assuming there had to be a lot of Yankee money in that area?
Yeah, game to game, we needed the Dodgers. Essentially every single game, we needed the Dodgers. And we kind of knew that going in. We were going to be winners going into the World Series. We're going to be winners in the future book to both teams. The Dodgers were going to be the better result for us. But we knew kind of game to game, we were just going to be taking Yankees money, and that certainly came to fruition. So overall, great result for the World Series for us with the Dodgers taking it, both in the future book and just the results of the individual games. Can't complain at all with that.
7-1 next year. People are already buying Yankee tickets.
I think they got to wait to see what's going to happen here with Minnesota. That's a big piece.
And I'm looking at the Mets too at 14-1 here, Thomas. Very quickly, are people believing that maybe last year they might get Juan Soto? I know that's what we're hoping as Met fans. Is there any money coming in on that, or is maybe some Phillies money at 10-1 for next year?
There's always Mets money, Dave. You guys love to bet your team in the futures market. I love taking it. It's a yearly thing here.
He loves taking our money, Michael.
It's the greatest. It's the gift that keeps on giving, TG. And you're going to get Philly money in there for sure. I mean, I was on Philly radio and they've already signed Juan Soto. Yeah, he just doesn't know it yet. That's all.
I thought he's going to New York. He's going to Philly. Thomas, great having you back on the program.
Going to Philly.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Great stuff from Thomas Gable, as always. Come on back. We'll get back into the weekend slate of the NFL next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We continue the Friday edition here of the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi here with you. And Michael, it was really fun having Thomas Gable on in the last segment there from the Borgata. Yeah. And, you know this, and you're in that neck of the woods. You look at the Eagles now, all of a sudden, I think people have a right to get excited about what they've seen here in this three-game win streak. So I've got to ask you here on this Friday, do we have a different game or more of the same this week for the Eagles against the Jags? Because you look at what they did against the Bengals. 37 points scored, 397 total yards, pretty darn good. 24 first downs, we're keeping the ball, not giving it away, zero turnovers, and no sacks. You got to lay 7.5, total of 45.5. Michael Lombardi, is it going to be a different game or more of the same?
Well, they're going against a defense that ranks 29th in points allowed, 29th in yards. They can't turn the ball over. They're 30th in turnovers created. You know, they're 29th in first downs allowed. I mean, could it set up any better for them? Oh, and by the way, they can't play the pass. I mean, they really struggle in the secondary. You know, I mean, this defense has really been disappointing for them. They made the defensive coordinator change from Mike Caldwell to Ryan Nielsen. And Nielsen did a really good job in Atlanta, but I think this Jacksonville team has struggled, and they've struggled to rush the passer more than anything. I mean, they've got Travion Walker, who they took ahead of Aiden Hutchinson, and they've got Josh Allen over there on the side, and they can't really generate any turnovers from pressure. And then you can run the football, and then conversely, look, they just refuse to run the ball. I think they have one of the best young backs in the league in Tank Bigsby. You know, he's been very impressive. He's got almost 500 yards rushing on the ground so far this year. But they just don't ever want to establish the run. They want to establish turnovers and throw in the football. And I think, to me, now without Christian Kirk in the game, they're going to lose him. What do? They play Parker Washington. Where do they go with that? I don't know if they're as talented at receiver as they need. Brian Thomas has been outstanding. This game sets up perfectly for Philly, because if they can double Brian Thomas, will they take it out? They'll encourage Doug Peterson. They know Peterson well enough to know he's not going to call runs. And so they'll put the ball in Trevor Lawrence's hands, and there's a really good chance he could make some mistakes like he did last week. So it does. I think that, to me, when it gets to that 7.5 number, you always get worried about a backdoor cover right here, and you could lose it on that half point. I lean towards taking the Eagles here, but for me, I would say no play. I just think, to me, that they played Green Bay well. They turned the ball over twice in the red zone, in Green Bay's red zone, mm-hmm. actually, and which led to 14 points. So, you know, you're counting on them to make mistakes. I think this is the do or dies moment for Jacksonville. If they lose this one, then you know Doug's fired, and it's going to be, they're going to start selling off assets like they did Cam Robinson.
Yeah, with that Tuesday trade deadline coming up, if this goes south for the Jags at Lincoln Financial, then maybe we see more pieces traded. Very quickly, bigger picture, and does not give me any great joy to ask you this, is Kellen Moore growing up as a play caller? Like, are they getting better this year because Kellen Moore and Vic Fangio, obviously, in the defense? As a Cowboy backer, I hope the answer is no, but it does seem like the last couple of weeks, you know, they're not turning the football over, and you're getting the best out of Jalen Hurts.
Well, I think to me, what they've done is they really figured out, you know, who they are as a football team, right? I think that's been the key. They've been able to come up with that. They've tried to, you know, every game this year they've rushed for over 100 yards. They really have. And they've limited the amount of throws. I think they've kind of scaled back on what they want Jalen Hurts to do, throw the ball down the field, throw the over routes, play action pass. But they lead with the run game. I mean, they had 161 yards rushing last week. I mean, they beat the Giants. They only threw for 70 yards in that game. So I don't know if it's more as much as it is the fact that they've decided that after the bye week, this is who we are. This is what we have to do to win games. And it really worked last week against Cincinnati. They had 24 first downs. They were able to move the ball. And Hurts made great deep throws. I mean, to me, it's Hurts throwing short and throwing deep or running the ball. To me, that's when in 21-22, when they went to the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. it was their run game. They had two backs that averaged over 5 yards a carry. Miles Sanders had 1,200 yards rushing for him. They were a run team with play action pass down the field. That's where they've gotten back to, David.
Totally agree, and that worries me going forward as a Cowboy guy. Let's get to the Bills, and I'm going to ask you if this is a different game or more of the same, because I was told this summer that without Jordan Poyer and, you know, Micah Hyde, that this defense was going to collapse, and Sean McDermott will figure out what's going to happen there. But they were really good in the Pacific Northwest last week. They only allowed 10 points on the road. How about 233 yards total? 201 of those, by the way, through the air, only 32 rushing. They forced a couple turnovers. Only allowed one touchdown in the red zone. They're going to go up against the Dolphins. Tua is back, but it is up there in Orchard Park, laying the 6, high total of 49.5. More of the same or a different game here?
Well, I think you're going to get more of the same. I mean, look, they're healthy. Bernard, the middle linebacker, is not going to play. I mean, he's still injured, but now they get Von Miller back coming off of it. And Von Miller's actually played better for them this year than he did last year, where he didn't even make a tackle coming off the ACL injury. And I think they really, to me, this is about understanding who you're playing against, right? I think if you understand how to play Miami, how to really take away what Tua wants to do in terms of the areas of where he wants to throw the football, I think you'll play good defense against the Miami Dolphins. Again, Miami has no offensive line. You know, of course, they had to sign Odell Beckham because that just adds one more receiver that they can't get the ball to because they can't protect, you know? So it makes perfect sense to me. I think to me, this is a game where Josh Allen has had so much success against Miami. You know, what people don't realize is Miami's on their third defensive coordinator under Mike McDaniel.
Yeah.
By the way, did you see the little kid who came out, his costume was the Mike McDaniel costume for coaching?
Was it beautiful?
It was hilarious. Oh, it was.
Did he have the capri pants on? I got to see that.
Oh, yeah, the capri pants on. It was unbelievable. Anyway, that's a side thing. But to me, you know, there's a couple factors going here. Josh Allen is they've played against Tua 7 times, and he's 7-1 straight up in those games. He's 5-2-1 against the spread. You know, and one thing about Allen, when he covers the spread, he does it by 13.5 points. He's been unbelievable. And they've scored 26, 32, 48, and 56 whenever they play Tua at home. So, and then Tua, when he goes on the road, he struggled. You know, he really does. And he struggles to play against good teams. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, that's one of the things we've all talked about. He struggles against good teams. Now, fortunately, I know it's the 1st of November and the gales of November come early, but they're not coming early in this game because he's got, you know, the weather's going to be, well, last time I checked, let me look here, the weather is going to be 58 degrees and no rain. So you got to, you know, it's a perfect day for Miami, but is Miami good enough on defense? You know, when you break Miami down defensively and you take it away, I mean, they're not very good at all. They can't turn the ball over. Right. They have a hard time stopping anybody's run game. And then in the passing game, teams don't even try to throw. They're only a face so far this year. It's interesting. They're the number 2 team in the National Football League in facing passing attempts because teams have just been so easy to run the football on them.
Right.
And that's why you don't get a lot of passing attempts. But they're 19th in the league in yards per attempt. When you do throw it, you can throw it like they did, like the Cardinals did last week.
Here's what I do know. Every man should know their limitations. I know I cannot wear capri pants. It's just not a good look.
The
Bengal
Neither
offense.
Can Mike McDaniel, but he does it anyway. He does it anyway. I mean, you know, it's like somebody texted me the other day and said, could he please show some respect for the great coaches and dress appropriately? And I kind of agree. Like,
oh, man.
You know, would Tom Landry be in those capris? Now, Lombardi wore those capris. Remember, he used to wear them on the sideline in Green Bay, right?
Yeah.
You know, you remember those? I think I have a picture of them somewhere in my office of them. I love that, you know, but like, really, is this, you know, he's a disc jockey. That's what I call him on the podcast, Dave. I call him a disc jockey. He's spinning records on the sidelines over there.
So good. It's so good. Yeah. By the way, Tom Landry's going to forever be my end all be all of head coaches. I'm not saying everybody's got to be like Tom with the hat and the fedora, but boy, did he look nice on the sidelines. It does not look pretty for this Bengal offense, Michael. So I got to ask you this week if it's going to be a different game or more of the same. Only 17 points against those Eagles last week. It couldn't get to 300 total yards, by the way. Can't run the football, 2.9 yards per rush here. You turn it over a couple of times. Now you get the dysfunctional Raiders coming to the Natty. Cincinnati has not won at home yet this year, and the numbers come down to 7, total of 46.5. Is it going to be more of the same? And if it is more of the same, Michael, that's not good.
Yeah, I mean, this is a game where, first of all, if the Raiders don't play well in this one, I think Antonio Pierce is one and done from everything I've been hearing around the league. And from the comments that are coming out of that building, it's not good, you know, and they're going to need to play better here. They're going to have to get something going because, you know, Gardner Minshew, I mean, Gardner Minshew will play a game where, you know, they have enough skill players. They're going to give Cincinnati trouble. If I leaned anywhere, I lean towards taking the Raiders and the points here because they're going to move the ball on them. The problem with the Raiders this year has been, I think today is the anniversary of when they fired McDaniels. Ooh. And they fired, you know, Dave Ziegler, the general manager, yeah, last year. And today's that anniversary. And really, in fact, over the year, they haven't gotten any better. I mean, they're 31st in the league in running the football. They can't run the ball. They can't throw it. They're 25th in yards per attempt. They have no quarterback. And where they've really gotten bad, David, is they've gotten bad on defense. They're not the same team defensively that they were last year. You know, and so for all the changes that they've made, and, you know, of course, everybody was happy when Pierce became the head coach. I don't think anybody's happy right now.
Not with the results. They do not look good. But again, it does feel like that's where the money's going towards the Raiders this week. Tim Murray is going to join us at the top of hour number two here to talk some college football next here in the Lombardi Line.